The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me today are Stephen Lucan and Cameron Utley, certified financial planners. And today's topic encompasses a couple of different items. We decided to kind of bunch them together because they are related to each other. Navigating the digital age, protecting your identity, and understanding Ohio's CPA shortage. Seem like they might be disconnected, but they are not. We have covered identity protection in the past, but there is just so much information. I think it was kind of a good revisit given the latest data breaches that are, on deck. It seems like it's happening more and more. So I'm happy to be able to cover a little bit of a different angle this time together and with a different team. So let's get into it. I want to start with the consumer impact of a CPA shortage. This is something that was completely off of my radar as an every person. First of all, it's strange to me that it's even happening. I'd like to understand why it's happening as an every person. First of all, what your perceptions are. We're not CPAs. Certainly, we deal with the specialists in that arena, but we work very closely with them, and our work is very much impacted by what they do. So if somebody is struggling to find, let me backtrack. I want to know, why is there a shortage? Why do you think there's a shortage?
Want to go with the young person here? Because sure. It's the young person graduating from college. I just think there's lack of interest. There's a lot of industries with lack of interest from the youth of America. It may have started with my generation. It's leading into other generations. And I think it's lack of appeal too, right? It's not a very exciting career, but it is very lucrative, profitable. Like, you can make a lot of money and have a very good long career with it, but I just don't think there's appeal to it. That's my guess.
And I think there's a lot to say about what job fields are probably oversaturated. There is a large need for medical professionals, but there are a lot of medical professionals out there. I think there's a lot of emphasis of, I think we run into the same issue with people in the trades. We're very short on electricians, plumbers, HVAC technicians. And not to say it's not lucrative. You can be very lucrative doing those things. But I think CPAs could fall into that category where whether it's just not enough marketing efforts to push those fields or, unfortunately, individuals going to college to get degrees that they probably end up not using. Being a CPA, you largely need a very specific type of education to go out into that field. So there's that opportunity that's being missed.
My dime store analogy, my perception is what you were talking about earlier, the lack of interest, the lack of excitement. Not all careers are exciting. And honestly, I don't know anybody that is super excited about their career all the time. But in the day and age of influencers and social media and everything being, you're looking
glamour.
At everything through rose-colored glasses. Everything's glamorous, yes.
Yeah.
And then as far as the other trades, it's, they don't sort of market those in school like they used to. So it's kind of a different sort of point of view for each of those, but certainly definitely relevant.
It takes a very specific person, in my opinion, to be a good CPA. It's not, you have occupations where it's very analytical, you're crunching numbers, and it's CPA does a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But you also have to sit across from someone at the table and make sense of something complicated to them. Mm-hmm. And a CPA needs to be able to do that as well. And I think, if you're one or the other, you can learn the other side of it. But again, there's maybe just a lack of interest of getting over that hurdle.
So it sounds like they need to do some creative marketing, on the side of the schools, right?
And that, again, right, you look at our problems we have with student loan debt, and part of it is the inability to earn an income to pay back the student loan is part of the challenges that we have to overcome. Where the schools and universities offering that here's a good trade or career aside from computer science, I just think we went too heavy with computers.
I agree.
Right?
We need CPAs.
Yes,
we need them.
Yes. Yeah.
Most people can't do their own taxes efficiently.
There's a declining number of CPAs. The article that you're referencing that we were reading together is for Ohio, but I'm sure it's nationwide too. I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. Right.
It is, actually. I kind of looked into that a little bit. It is overarching. There are a lot of other states having the same issue. Mm-hmm. I wonder how long it'll go on before they get a hold of it.
Yeah.
So if somebody's struggling to find a CPA, where do they start? Where do you suggest they start?
Yeah, you have to look at the associations for CPAs. I would usually start with colleagues and friends, see if they have somebody who's a trusted advisor, CPA. If they even need a CPA, and that's the one of the things I actually liked about the tax code change a few years ago. It's gotten a lot better where you can do things yourself, file tax returns yourself. And I really believe with AI, we're going to get to the point where all we got to do is sign it. It's going to be done for us because I've seen it. I've seen it firsthand. The TurboTax, it pulls in all the data from all the investment accounts. It pulls in your W-2 information. And so it's all being done and generated. And with AI, the way we're going, I wouldn't be surprised if it's all done automatically. But the tax returns have gotten easier. Mm-hmm. So the need for the common person W-2 income, it's the demand is lightning there where we'll be able to do it ourselves more easily.
Certified public accountant.
Yeah.
So for those who aren't super familiar, do they do anything besides tax management?
Well, that's what you have to ask. Usually for a CPA, maybe if somebody's a business owner that's needed, or maybe K-1 income, 1099 income, they may need someone a little bit more experienced versus maybe two people with W-2 income. So the complexity really depends. But I would start with just asking friends, family, seeing if they know anybody, colleagues, trusted colleagues, and start there. And then you may have to expand through a search and then go do an interview process.
Yeah, CPAs are very, they kind of go the next step of, sure, they can do tax preparation for you, but they can take that next step and give you true comprehensive tax advice. I think, like you said, really catered maybe more to the business owner when it comes to the complexity side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But some CPAs might have expertise in estate tax planning. They might have, business succession planning, tax planning around that. Corporate tax planning, they usually the qualifications for a CPA are a wide net, just like they are for CFPs.
Got it. This is probably very logical, but let's spell it out for people. Mm-hmm. How does the shortage of these professionals impact the costs of doing business and the costs of services?
Yeah, costs or even just finding one, like you said, it's harder to find one if you need one. But costs should go up. It'll probably go up, and they're going to try to push people to learn to file their own tax returns. And it's disappointing because I love numbers, and even through my years of being a certified financial planner, I've come to really love and appreciate taxes, something I didn't know when I was in my 20s. And I was dumbfounded, but I didn't know how to file the tax return. And someone helped me, and I still struggled with it. It's very complex. Right, to understand. It's
Stephen, it took me, I'm embarrassed to admit it, but for those out there who are in the same boat and are embarrassed as well, we're in an exclusive club. It took me years to understand how to read a W-2. It took me a long time, I won't say years, but it took me a long time to understand how to read my pay stub.
Yeah.
So, and nobody teaches you that.
No,
so
they
you
don't.
Really have to take the initiative and be proactive. Don't just trust that something is being done properly without being involved.
And we're good at the W-2s because we see them. We're every week we're reading new ones and we're constantly reading them. You read yours once a year.
Right.
Right. Most people read it once a year. I was in that boat. I would just look at it once a year and then say, what do I do now? It's frustrating. It's hard. But like I said, with the technology, it's going to be where you don't even have to read. It's going to be inputted directly into the tax preparation
That's
software.
That's a great segue to my next question. All right. So with a shortage of CPAs, and maybe we've already addressed this, but how can people still receive comprehensive advice on their tax planning process without
CFPs.
A CPA?
Well, that's what a financial planner should assist with, right? And we're not CPAs. We usually recommend CPAs, and we use the term who's going to be the accountant? Some people, we're doing it ourselves, TurboTax. Okay, but we're going to present something. You have to. This is going to be now the tax preparation side that has to assume that next step to say, okay, yeah, we're going to do this tax planning idea. But a certified financial planner can assist with some of the basics of tax planning.
Now that's a big chunk of our business.
Yes.
So if you can kind of spell out for people, because I'm sure there are still some out there that are saying, well, what's the difference between a CPA and a CFP? It's alphabet soup to me. So the CFP
is
as far as tax planning.
Is the generalist, right? So now think of it in a medical career, medical profession. You go to your generalist. Okay, Steve, something's wrong with your heart. I don't go see the generalist again. Now I go to the cardiologist, right? So the specialist is the expert in the area, which is the CPA. So we present the tax planning idea. Say, here's an idea that could benefit you. Let's bring in the CPA. Let's bring in the tax professional.
And you're taking into consideration not just salary, but living expenses, retirement accounts,
everything. Across the board. Right? Everything across the board. You can do more for your financial plan through tax planning than you can through investing easily. So that's and then those tax benefits enhance your investments, which enhances your retirement planning, right? It's all cause and effect, but the taxes are a significant part of that process.
Yeah, I think the other side of what a CPA brings to the financial planning team, because we, you know, again, as a CFP, we see ourselves, not to make another analogy, but as the coach, if you think of a sports team, then you have your attorney and your accountant, your insurance agent, you name it, as the players on the team. And, you know, the coach comes up with the strategy and then brings in, you know, you're not going to bring in your quarterback to make a punt, right? You're going to bring your punter in. And so that's when we'd bring in the accountant to tell them what the strategy is, what play we think we should run. And that's the gives the CPA the room to say, okay, here's how I think we should do it. Mm-hmm. You know, should we do X, Y, or Z this year or wait till next year? And I also think a good CPA, and maybe we didn't say this earlier, takes what maybe just a do-it-yourself tax strategy of waiting until January, February, and do your tax return, call it a year. A good CPA should be talking with you about tax planning throughout the year before you go to file your taxes.
Voluntarily, or is that something you schedule meetings with them about? Is that on you?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's on the client's on the client's ownership to go out and schedule a meeting with the CPA. Sometimes we run into, you know, that's coming back at us. Hey, the accountant's reaching out asking us to meet. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the end of the year. There's this, that, and the other we should be considering. What should we do to be most efficient?
Mm-hmm. As people that have across the board, everything from student loan debt to retirement
right,
accounts,
yep.
it's a spider web.
I'm sure you've experienced about the middle of February, you start getting things in the mail and all kinds of emails with all these documents, like you said, are confusing to read, and half the time we're trying to figure out what they even mean and where they came from.
And that's a good point. Well, you come February, right? The CPAs become... They're huddled, and you cannot reach them. Because I agree, they're focusing on taxes.
At least in my world, from February till October, when people are filing business taxes, I mean, our CPA is
overwhelmed.
Just absolutely slammed for months.
And that's why John always taught me, he's like, that's why you have to separate the financial planning and the tax planning, is come tax time, you can't get in touch with an accountant. Understandably, they're busy, they're overwhelmed. And that's where the financial planner can continue with the tax planning throughout the year, when the accountant can come up to breathe for air and say, okay, now we can discuss it. But that's why you have to separate the two as well.
And I guess I was going to say one more thing, maybe to marry it back into your original question, because maybe we got a little off track. But one tip that we often say, because January through March, April, May might be tough to get a hold of an accountant, especially if you're looking for a new accountant or a new CPA. You should say the summer months.
Yeah,
it's usually there's usually a respite period between the end of individual taxes in April and business taxes in October, where CPAs may much deservedly take some time off, but also open their doors for new prospects versus if you try to get an accountant in February, good luck.
Well, that's a great segue, actually. I'll say it a second time here to you, because when you talk about potential delays in tax filing, I mean, let's paint a picture for people. What does that look like? If you wait until the last minute, that can be pretty ugly.
Yeah, totally. And that's Cameron's point, right? You have to be proactive with it. So if you're looking for whatever reason to change your CPA, do it in the off season, do it in the summer months.
Yeah, I also think be reasonable. Understand that your CPA is a human, and if much of what we think is tax preparation is what a lot of CPAs do, especially in the first couple months of the year, having that realistic expectation of they're probably not going to get to my email the same day, or they're not going to complete my taxes in 1 week. It might take 3 or 4 weeks for them to do it, which is all the more reason why I need to get them anything I'm receiving tax related to them as soon as possible.
Yeah. And on that note, the tax preparers generally, in most instances, is looking back in time. They're finishing up that prior year's tax return. The financial planner is looking forward.
Oh, that's a great
right?
analogy.
So forward thinking, Here's what's coming down the road. And a lot of the times, if you have a good team, they work together great. Because You help the financial planner should be helping the CPA, mm-hmm. the tax preparer, with the tax planning, forward thinking, and then the tax preparation is wrapping it up. So it's looking back.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Couple of questions. I have these written down because some of them are very specific. So I'm just going to read these to you. Let's help people have a better understanding on some of these things. So the impact on retirement tax planning. So if somebody's worried about how the CPA shortage might affect the accuracy of their retirement tax planning in specific, how can we help them ensure that their tax strategy remains effective and compliant?
I think just what Stephen said earlier, we need to talk about it not in this November, December, but talk about, talk about in the middle of the summer and beginning of the fall when school starts back up, months before we need to make the decision mm-hmm. at the latest, what are we doing not only for this year, but the next year or the next 2 years? That's where CFP can know enough to be dangerous to at least get the concept out and the general strategy and then looping the accountant in. And, with good heads up, realistic expectations, like I said earlier, to really put the pen to paper.
Right, especially in tandem with Social Security, Medicare, All those good things.
Yes. Oof. And all the changes, qualified charitable distributions are big now. There's so many that we can open a Pandora's box.
There's a reason your tax return's, 50, 60 pages long for some.
I think they do it on purpose to confuse me. All right, alternative resources and services. I think we kind of covered this, but given the CPA shortage, what alternative resources or services should people consider to ensure they receive reliable financial advice regarding tax planning support?
Well, reliable is a slippery slope, right? Because you don't know what you don't know. Right. So I've seen there a lot of maybe churches will offer tax preparation. You can go to the corner store, right? H&R Block. Mm-hmm. They can do it. But it's only as accurate or as accurate as the person doing it. And the software should help them. But you don't know. You don't know. Right. So most people don't know. But mm-hmm. see if that's again. A good financial planner also review the tax return, saying, mm-hmm. let's look through it, make sure it's accurate, and see if there's anything overlooked. Because things do get overlooked.
So it's good to let the CFP vet the completed tax return 100%. Before you file it.
Right, and they can reference their notes, everything we're compiling in 2024. In 2025, we're going to look back and say, okay, here are all the things that were implemented. Mm-hmm. Were they reflected on the tax return properly? Because I've seen some crazy stuff over the years. So
this one is... I'm not sure if this is a relevant question. I think we've covered it, but if you've noticed costs for financial services through your CPA are rising due to the shortage, how can you best manage potential increases in fees without the compromise of the quality of service? I don't even know if we can answer that.
Just know what you're paying for.
Yeah,
and just understand that costs go up for a variety of reasons. In this case, most likely due to the fact that there's such a high demand and low supply, and basic economics tells us that that's going to make prices go up. So just making sure for what you're paying that you're getting a competitive service, I think, is probably the most important thing I think of.
Yeah.
And researching that how?
You have to interview.
Interviewing right? different CPA, yeah. different
firms. See how they charge, what they charge, and then the complexity of your plan. You can ask on your interview process to say what would you estimate the cost is. They probably won't be able to tell you, mm-hmm. but you can get an idea based on hours and what's their hourly rate or how they charge per form, right? Mm-hmm. Do you have a Schedule E or, a 1099 income? So it just depends on the complexity of it.
And just like anything else, everyone values things a little bit differently, but I think what makes any professional stand out is communication. You could have the best and the brightest professional out in the world, CPA in the world, but if they don't communicate well, whether it's in a meeting or via an email or a phone call, then what are you paying for? Right. It may pay for, I want, if I if I don't know something, I'm paying someone to tell me and help me understand right. something I don't know. I need someone that can effectively communicate.
You literally walk as somebody off the street. You're walking in, and it's a good faith industry. You're handing over your documentation, and you're praying they know what they do, know what they need to do, and then they hand it back to you, and you're praying it was done correctly, mm-hmm. and they make you sign a liability form saying they're not responsible.
Doesn't that sound like some other professions too?
Yeah,
whether it's a medical, dental.
I'm signing it over, but I don't know how to read this, and I don't know the right questions to ask. So you know, it's a lot of responsibility. You need to make sure you vet the firm very carefully.
Yeah. And again, it's hard, but you should ask, can we review it? Where do these numbers come from? And unfortunately, people are usually exhausted,
and embarrassed.
Embarrassed to say, I don't know, right? And but at
I'll
the end of the day,
that.
You mean the tax return's done, where do I sign?
Mm-hmm.
Get it over with, right?
Yeah.
And you just bury it and say, okay, it's done.
Yeah.
But the reviewing process is important too. But that's all, that depends on the individual, and we always preach, try to learn, and that's from the education side. You can benefit from it. So,
and it'll take quite a while.
Yes.
I can tell you that.
Yep.
All right. If somebody's concerned about the delays in tax filings and financial planning due to the CPA shortage, how can they minimize the risk of the delays that might affect the financial timeline? Is there a...
I don't know if there's an answer to that. Just, again, you just have to... Do you need a CPA and what's their process and how complex is your situation? Most people, if they have been filing an extension, they'll continue to file an extension. And extensions aren't bad. People think that's going to trigger an audit. It does not. You just got to work with them as part of your team.
Speaking of audit, if somebody were to face an audit during retirement... how might the CPA shortage impact the ability to receive timely and effective audit support, and what steps should people take to prepare for that?
I think it starts with how you're currently doing your tax planning. I know that if you're doing it yourself, and there are some resources if you pay for the right package, which there are feels like 100 different options when you go to sign up and they try to entice you to buy the more expensive do-it-yourself package. There might be some audit support available. I would read the terms of whatever you signed up for. If you have a CPA, they're going to be able to kind of stand there with you and help one make sense of what they're requesting and saying that you did wrong and help resolve the issue.
Yeah. Most of the time for retirees, it's probably because they missed the 1099. Like it had some dividend or interest income. They forgot about it, didn't include it on their tax return. It triggers. It actually... triggers a letter from the IRS. It's not a full audit, right? But you'll get notified from the IRS it wasn't reported on your tax return. And then actually even TurboTax has support teams too. So you can go through your software. It's extra cost, but that might be the first line of offense or defense, however you want to phrase it.
So there's a complexity here, I think, that we've all experienced right now, especially with the cybersecurity aspect of it. And this is going to bring us into the second part of our topic. These folks really should have some specialized knowledge. I know we do have some specialized knowledge and additional training because, like, small businesses may struggle if there's a CPA that doesn't have both accounting and cybersecurity protocols in place. So how important is that?
Very important.
Even if somebody's doing their forms by hand, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah,
somebody's saying I don't e-file, I do it by hand. It doesn't really matter because
but the CPAs have direct access to the IRS. That's the other thing too, is they have a contact with the IRS. They can communicate with directly on your behalf. There's some forms that need to be signed, but a certified public accountant will have direct access to the IRS. A website and your account. Most people don't realize that you have an account with the IRS and you can log in and see it. You can see your tax history. You can get old tax returns. Again, most people don't want to know this because they're like, it's taxes, stay away.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
So where do they go to get
IRS.
that?
IRS.gov.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, fair warning. I did this a couple of weeks ago when we went to close on our house. If you haven't logged in a while, I don't think you're going to be able to do it before you have to run the work in the morning. Might want to take a Saturday morning, a full half day to get
100%. And you can make tax estimate payments all through the website. It's real. That's why I actually think that one day we'll just be logging in and it's used the ID.me verification. And it does take. I remember doing it. And I was like, boy, this is a burden of time. So
make sure you have a very strong password for that account.
Always. always. Every website.
So that brings us to protecting your identity. Protecting your identity. Yeah, we've done this topic. We've actually had this topic before very recently. So if you're interested in learning more, feel free to search for that conversation. But if somebody's credit was fraudulently used and they're worried about online security, let's say through the IRS website or any other medical website or whatever, what can they do to improve their digital security? What's the first step they should take?
I think the first step I would take is sign up for the seemingly endless amount of resources you probably have access to that will do some sort of credit monitoring or identity monitoring. A lot of banks now offer this through their platforms. There's free resources like Credit Karma.
Should you sign up for more than one? Like, I mean, every time somebody offers it, should you sign up for it? Or is it just really, you know, sort of...
I think it depends on each situation. If you were violated, yes, probably have to be a little bit more diligent and do it more frequently versus somebody who's had very few issues with it. Mm-hmm. You probably can do it once a year or so forth.
Okay. Yeah.
But to your point, since we're looping in the CPAs, a couple things. Never, ever just email PDF files of 1099s. There should be a portal interface between you and your CPA where you share data, information. Same thing with CFP. Just you don't email documents because if your email gets compromised, that information is there. They can just do a search with attachments or they can just do search for keywords. But you never want to just email documents, and the accountant should never just email documents back to you. That's very, very dangerous, and that's a red flag for me.
And fraudsters, they're good. Right. Yeah. I mean,
talk about experience.
I can't tell you how many times it's happened to me where I've gotten an email from Steven and it says, hey, send $5,000 or whatever to this account. And then I was like, oh, I don't know why Steve would ever, he could just call me and tell me that. Or why does it need to go to his bank account or whatever? And you look at the email that sent it, it says Steven Lucan, but then it's just 1234 at hotmail.com.
Do you remember that year? I don't know if you remember this. It's been a few years ago. I got an email from you, I thought, and you had asked me to order a bunch of gift cards for the staff.
That's right. Yeah.
Some American Express gift cards. And so I literally start kicking up my heels, pushing through the process to order these gift cards. Right. And as I started moving through the email, just something it didn't sound like you. And at that time, I didn't know what the key elements, key elements to look for were, really.
It's phishing.
It was so legitimate, and I almost pulled the trigger, and then I kind of stopped and looked at it again. My ire was up. I looked up and recognized that the email address was not right.
Yeah,
and I think good segue. Maybe I don't know what your next question is. Maybe I don't know what the segue is, but I think we even had another instance where we've gotten emails from a client's or another professional's legit email account. But because they didn't have a strong password, their email got compromised, and they started looking through who they recently, the sent folder, who they recently been communicating with. Oh, look, they got Steven Lucan as their financial planner. Let's talk about getting a distribution out, going to a different routing number than maybe the client's normal.
See, that's so relevant. I've had a few conversations with younger people who scoffed when I said change your email password often.
Right.
What are they going to get? Right. What are they going to get? Yeah. Well, right there's a perfect example.
Sure.
Right.
And
they don't look at your inbox. They look at your sent files. Right. They don't care about your inbox. They care about your sent file. Where did you send emails to?
So your bank, your doctor.
Yeah, everybody in your, that's the first thing they go to.
And I think the assumption most fraudsters make, and unfortunately I don't think they're not all too wrong, is if they can get into your email, they probably know the password to a whole bunch of other places too. So your email shows everyone gets spam emails from all kinds of places where you go shop, all the rewards points you're getting at PetSmart, all that. And then you go, they probably think, oh, well, what if I try the email password at, xyz.com? And if you have an account there, you're probably going to get in because if we're all being honest, if we don't have a secure way of storing passwords, we're probably using the same two or three.
A common scam that was occurring 5-10 years ago is people were filing tax. It probably still does happen, but I heard it from a couple people that people were filing tax returns with their Social Security number, getting the refund. And then when you go to file your tax return, it's like, it's already been filed.
That happened to me.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it was over a year before we got our tax return. That was before we e-filed.
Yeah.
E-filing, we were told, is the safest way with a PIN. We started getting a PIN. But that was a nightmare.
Yeah.
It was dozens and dozens of hours on the phone to try to protect and fix and get a substantial refund that we had coming us because they had fraudulently breached us through the IRS. Yeah. Yeah. And I think to help people, especially folks who are not super tech savvy, when you get an email from a company, and we talk about this at the office, even as experts, check the email address, check the footer, and never, ever, ever call the number in the email. Always go outside of the email to your own, to the web, directly to the website, or your own resource that you have in your directory to access.
And never click any link from someone that you don't definitively know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's even with the Social Security. It was a couple years ago. I got my, you have your new statement available. And I clicked the link, and immediately I was just like, what did I just do? Because I thought, I was like, it said from your Social Security office and click the link to get your new statement.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it was a legitimate email. But when it was cycling, I'm like, what did I just trigger here?
Oh, my gosh.
But yeah,
my hands are sweating thinking about it.
If I got an email from Social Security now, I delete the email. I go to the SSA.gov, and I log in that way. So if you get an email, go through the direct access. Don't click any links in your email. That's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, talking about devices, so, laptops, iPads or pads, phones, what can people do first, second, last to protect their devices?
I like the facial identity. That's fantastic these days.
That creeps me out.
Yeah, but yeah, the way I look at it, even with the recent, was AT&T thing. Like, I just basically, I assume everybody has my information. That's the way I approach things. Uh-huh. So I go on offense and I say, okay, I want to know every time my credit card is charged, all my credit cards, my debit card, I want a text transaction saying, you always have your phone with you.
Yeah.
Who doesn't have their phone with them?
Yeah, but what about your phone password?
Six digits, facial recognition. That's pretty good. Six digits is pretty good.
I think the odds are, it's for like every digit you add, it's exponentially more secure.
Yeah.
And the face ID or the thumb ID or whatever, it goes even further than that.
Yeah.
You're not afraid of the apocalypse, somebody cloning you with your face?
No, like I said, I just assume everybody's got everything about me, and then I just try to stay on offense. And I swear by the text notifications of credit card charges. I got due to my travel, I got a new card with airline travels to get more points. And I had the hardest time getting the text message. I was like, for days, I was just trying to fix it and get it going. And it took me a while, but I finally got it to work where I get text messages. Now I get an email, text messages, and all kinds because I was overdoing it. But
if you're just using the type in password, maybe don't use your birthday. Maybe don't use your spouse's birthday. Maybe don't use your house number.
Use
something that you can remember, but something that someone else can't easily figure out. Don't use the last
phrases. I heard is a good prep password.
On iPhones, I don't know if any other phones are like that, where it doesn't have to be number. You can type in a phrase or you can type in words as your password instead.
So it becomes a game of Jeopardy.
Yes.
For the hacker.
Yeah. I don't know if you get a hint.
Right.
But
so two-step authentication. Mm-hmm. Right?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I forgot that one.
Did we talk about that?
No,
so
that was
good. So go on to the website of the credit card company and into the security part of your account.
Most are making it mandatory, right? I see it more
It's weird because I have a couple of different cards and one does and one doesn't.
All right, really? So here's a fun one. So, we often recommend getting what's called password managers. So the idea is you only have to make a good password, but you only have to remember that one. Then you save all of your logins into that. You make them.
I love it.
You make them super secure.
But what if that's hacked?
But that's what you said. That's
They have been hacked. Those places have been hacked.
So
based on how they encrypt their data. Again, I'm not a computer scientist by any means.
So, but if it's hacked, then you've got to go in and change all of the passwords of what you've got logged. Correct.
No, but it's okay. So there was one company last password that was hacked, I think, a year or so ago.
Yeah.
And when they announced. Press release, hey, we got hacked. But in that memo, they said, well, even though our information was taken, it was all encrypted. And based on our encryption measures, it would take the hackers millions of years to decode what we had. So your information's safe.
And they actually would then notify you of, here are some passwords that could be compromise, right? Change it, and you get notified, and it constantly notifies you. So again, you got to stay on offense. But I do believe in password managers.
But with the two-factor authentication, and there's other variations of it. You know, some people get the text to whether it's text to your phone or a QR code that you scan. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of different ones, but those password managers have those programs built into their systems, meaning not only can you add the 6-digit code into that manager to have it sent there, but you can also, they'll also send you alerts saying, hey, here are 10 websites that you have logins for that you can set up 2-factor authentication for.
That's great.
You proactively know what sites you can go to and set that up on.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Okay, so 2-step authentication. Notifications. Actually, I know that you can set this up through your email, too, through Gmail. And so do it wherever you can do it.
Yeah.
Your medical.
Who's calling me? I'm like, Cole, my wife's calling me right now.
Oh, come on. Tell her. Tell her we're busy.
It's a common occurrence.
That's
awesome. They're all cahoots.
That's awesome. They all talk to each other. Yeah. Okay. So you can do that through for all of your accounts, really. That most of them are doing it now. The 2-step authentication. Yeah.
They call it also biometrics. Password is the facial ID, thumbprint kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah. So okay. Anything else besides the notifications and the 2-step and the password manager software that you can think of?
I know that there are some. It's a flavor of the same thing, but there are some apps that specifically are made to. It's a 2-factor, a level 2-factor authentication. It says notify this app. You open the app on your phone, it scans your face, and that's used as the second form of authentication.
Yeah.
I think the newer one I've seen.
Yeah. Or like what Google does is says you've logged in from another device.
Yeah.
Yes,
right.
It's me. And they give you the number and then you type
in
the number.
I forgot about that.
There's a lot of different things. But
I think the moral of the story, it's a hassle. It's a pain in the butt to deal with, but it's for our good.
Yeah.
Innocent people get punished.
Right. Talking about backing up your data.
Yeah.
Do you guys back up your data?
Well, that's what the cloud has benefited, right?
What if you had a cloud storage?
Yeah. Definitely should back up your data. I mean, we believe data management is the foundation of our service. Mm-hmm. It is so, so important to know where your data is and what you have. The data is the most important piece of it. So, yeah, you should have it backed up.
So if there's a cyber attack, where do you get it? How do you access it? Do you have to sign into it?
Yeah, it's a paid service. It could be the Dropbox. It could be Google Docs. The ones that are out there for the common consumer. But you could pay for a subscription somewhere a little bit more private. But it just depends what you're looking for.
Should you put that in your password manager as well?
It's absolutely. A login, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
So I've heard about GDPR and other GDPR. So let's tell people what that means first.
I don't know what it means. I've never heard the term.
GDPR, compliance with privacy regulations. Maybe this is a CPA term.
Probably.
Okay. Maybe. All right. That was a blonde moment. We're just going to pretend like I didn't say that. All right. Impact of digital transformation on privacy. So how's the shift towards digital services impacted the privacy of our clients, do you think?
Well, it's a web world. And this is now 20-plus years happening.
And we've been virtual for far longer than many companies, right?
Yeah, but now it's everything's web-based. So everybody's got apps now. In the old days, everyone had websites. Now we have both. So it's a technology world. You got to adapt to it.
What I lose sleep at night is I often think about, to my own detriment, how easy it is. Tracy, how easy is it if you need something? We think about the convenience of going on somewhere like Amazon and ordering something. It gets here in 2 days.
If you're fine.
How easy is it to just go on Amazon and order that?
Oh, it's terrifyingly easy. It's addicting.
Yep. So if someone, suffocating logic, if someone got access to your Amazon login, it's just as easy for them to get access to that and order whatever they want. And so I've heard a lot of people say, I think there's a new wave of advice every day when it comes to cybersecurity. The one I've heard most recently is be conscious of your safe payment methods. Because if someone...
Such as
if, you probably have a saved payment method on Amazon. Well, if someone gets access to your Amazon, they can make purchases on your card, have it sent to them.
Are you talking about like Zelle and Venmo?
Well, I'm thinking of just don't, when you enter your credit card information to order something online, just don't save the payment method. It might, you know, you can use certain tools to autofill it every time. You don't have to read the back of your card and type it in every, you know, every.
Or you get notifications every time your card gets charged, so you don't have to worry about it.
Or you assume Amazon is going to get hacked and Steven, you know, his Amex is going to be free to use.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
For one charge until I get track them down.
Yeah.
All right, dare I say most people do use online banking, and some people are uncomfortable with pop-up ads, which for some websites are a ton, right?
Yeah.
So if you're worried about how much of your personal data is being tracked, which they're tracking everything, every time you touch your computer, what suggestions do we give clients for people to protect their data in those cases? Like, don't click on those pop-ups first comment is, why are you clicking on a pop-up?
Yeah.
Yep. But it happens, and I hate this because older people are more vulnerable to technology, right? And that's what I've learned over the last even just 5 years, how important it is to stay up with technology, because I'm going to need to do that throughout my life as long as I can. It's just not fair. The dual authentication, we're going to call you or text you to your phone number on your account, but my account's a landline. I can't get a text and message. But that's happening now. And most people who have landlines are older generational people.
Right.
Because that was what they were accustomed to. So you've got to stay up with technology. That's the best advice, but it's hard. It's not easy. I've seen people age through. And you slow down with technology. Kids grow with it, mm-hmm. right? But you got to stay up to speed with it. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's harder.
I know of a situation that was a need for a property tax document to change hands. And they were requiring this elder to send it via email, and she didn't use email, and so they wanted her to drive it downtown, which she didn't drive.
Right.
She can't drive, so... I don't know how.
Courier.
Yeah.
Right? Remember the 80s? You got a bike courier.
DoorDash. I don't know. Does DoorDash take documents to the Department of Taxation?
Model, right?
I have no idea.
Machine, right?
Yeah. That's a good one. They still have this.
Yeah. So, it's hard. It's hard, but that's why you have to stay up to speed as much as you can, as long as you can.
Yeah. Great advice. Well, this has been fun. Thanks a lot. That's it for today. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you're going to come back. We hope you have a great day.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.